broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
I represent the rent is too damn high party. People working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week.
This is one of the most cynical ads that we have seen in a long time.
While the public interest in this case was certainly surprising.
Sweet lady kisses.
You're a fascist.
Your wife said the same thing.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch. Where we head to the looking glass and beyond. Every night on this show, taking you someplace, most talk shows, all talk shows, any talk show, man, they couldn't go if you held a loaded gun to their... 877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. Yes, the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show here into another hour. Brand new day. It's a Wednesday morning. What are we doing tomorrow morning, bud?
I got to go take the trash out.
Exactly. That's when the guys from Waste Management come around, and we cannot be late because they have the franchise, and Wayne Huizenga is a brilliant guy. The cat that owns or did own Waste Management also owned Blockbuster Video. Now, what does that tell you?
Man, are you kidding me? Now, that guy's rich. You know,
of course he's rich. He owns the Miami Dolphins, too, or did. I don't know what he owns anymore. But I find it to be one of life's humorous realities that the cat that owns the garbage company also owns Blockbuster Video.
Yeah, but that's very predictable commentary on, you know, oh, he owns garbage. And he also, in the garbage that they have in a movie and everything, you know.
Oh, okay, well, excuse me, Judith Crist, you know.
Well, I mean, he's making a good point.
Yeah, he's making a good point. You're right. It's predictable. Sorry, bud.
I mean, you know, not every movie is bad.
Well, I'm not saying it's bad. You know, I mean, maybe I should have. All right, so you're right. Okay. What the reason why he does that.
Yeah, I know. He likes to rent stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you already told a story.
Okay.
You just move on?
Yeah, I'm going to move on. Don't worry about it, man.
Here.
I got the Tom Bosley story.
By the way, Bobby Dooley said that Tom Bosley and Barbara Billingsley died on the same day like John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And then
I understand what she wrote. I'll do it. Thank you very much. Bosley and Barbara Billingsley did not die on the same day. They died one day, 2 days, 3 days apart. Miss Billingsley, God rest her soul, died over the weekend. Mr. Bosley, I guess, passed on Tuesday. That's not the same as John Adams and Thomas Jefferson.
Pretty close, though.
Anyway, happy days, Dad. Tom Bosley died of heart failure Tuesday after a battle with lung cancer, according to his wife, Patricia Carr. He was 83 years of age. Bosley's 50 years as a television actor included roles on dozens of shows, but he was best known as Howard Cunningham, the patriarch of a 1950s Happy Days family, a show that aired for 11 seasons starting in 1974. Remarkable on so many levels, Tom's insight, talent, strength of character, and comic timing made him a vital central figure in the Happy Days experience, said Ron Howard, who played his son Richie. A great father and husband and a wonderful artist, Tom led by example and made us all laugh while he was doing it. That's a very nice series of comments there from Ron Howard. Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz on Happy Days, he said that Bosley was a family member both on and off the stage. We acted together, traveled together, and played charades together, Winkler said. He was a loving husband, a doting father, and a fantastic grandfather. He will be so missed but never forgotten by the Winkler family or the world. We do have some audio here. It's just a little bit of audio from the Happy Days days, man, in an episode here of Happy Days. It's called The Lemon. Here is Tom Bosley as he offers some fatherly advice on whether his son should buy a car.
Dad, I know it would be a big responsibility, but that's what you're always saying I need. It'd help me mature. It'd help me learn how to take care of things. You're going to be depending on me someday, you know.
Don't threaten me, Richard.
Howard, at least listen to what he has to say.
Me listen? You know, when I was a kid, my mother used to tell me to listen to my father. Now that I'm a father, my wife tells me to listen to my kids.
A lot of boys Richard's age have their own cars. Listen, let's just forget I ever even brought it up.
Now, look, Richard, you're old enough to make your own decisions. All I can do is offer you advice. I suggest that you finish high school and college, get yourself a job, and then you'll have enough money to buy yourself a decent car. That's my opinion. But You weigh the pros and the cons, and I'll go along with whatever you decide.
Terrific. I'm going to call Potsy and tell him we can get the car.
I'm glad he's not rushing into this.
That's funny. Bosley's professional acting career began on stage in the 1950s, including a Tony for his role as New York City Mayor LaGuardia in the 1959 musical Fiorello. I could see him as, well, you guys don't know what he is, but...
Yeah, that guy LaGuardia, I don't know.
He had just completed chemotherapy treatment for lung cancer, which was diagnosed 5 months ago when he suffered heart failure, according to his wife. Oh, boy. Funeral arrangements had not been announced, but the family's asking people to make donations to their favorite cancer charity. Before he worked in Happy Days, he was a regular on Love American Style, Night Gallery, The Debbie Reynolds Show, and dozens of other TV shows. He stayed busy through the 1980s, including several Love Boat episodes. He co-starred in 19 episodes of Angela Lansbury's Murder, She Wrote. He played the title role in The Father Dowling Mysteries, a series that ran on television for 4 years, beginning in 1987. And his distinctive voice was heard in numerous broadcast commercials and animation productions. So what do you think about that? I remember one funny line where Richie wants to go off with his friends, and he says, Dad, we want to go, and I think they wanted to go on a road trip. Didn't you go off someplace with your friends when you were a kid? And he goes, yeah, it was World War II. So.
Yeah, that's good.
Uh-huh. Don't you think it's like Jefferson and Adams?
No, I don't think it's like Jefferson and Adams. Fed up flight attendant, rest in peace, Mr. Bosley. Fed up flight attendant Stephen, because I'm now about to talk about some other guy that, anyway, fed up flight attendant Stephen Slater pleads guilty, avoids jail. DA believes Slater was drunk and suffering from mental problems.
Just like John Adams.
Will you get out of here? This is this guy that everybody thought was the greatest thing since sliced bread, remember? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the time, everybody, I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, well, I told you then, and I'm telling you now, the guy's a mess. At the time, I said he was a mess. How did all of a sudden this cat turn into some kind of a hero? You know? Anyway, the fed-up flight attendant who waved goodbye to his career at a spectacular exit down an emergency chute made a soft landing in court on Tuesday. Stephen Slater, 38, avoided jail under a plea bargain that requires him to undergo counseling and substance abuse treatment for at least a year, and he also must pay $10,000 in restitution to JetBlue. Yeah, that guy's got trouble, all right. Slater spoke calmly as he pled guilty to criminal mischief and attempted criminal mischief. Afterward, a smiling, upbeat Slater said, well, here's what he said.
While the public interest in this case was certainly surprising, unexpected, and encouraging, at the end of the day, I am a grown adult and must accept responsibility for my actions. Therefore, I'm looking forward to continuing on, moving forward with my life. And I am very grateful to the court for making these arrangements, which will allow me to do so.
Slater admitted he pulled the emergency chute on August the 9th on a flight from Pittsburgh after it landed at Kennedy Airport. He went on the public address system, told everybody to F it. And a passenger who was rude to him, he said, you too, and the horse you rode in on. He grabbed a beer, slid down the tarmac on the chute, ran off. He had a bandage on his forehead, apparently got hit with a piece of luggage before takeoff. Took a hostage, ran it. No, he didn't take a hostage. Anyway, Slater's departure made him a folk hero to put upon workers everywhere who have fantasized about quitting in a blaze of glory. I guess that was it, huh?
Yeah, I'll take this job and shove it.
Take this job and shove it, yeah. He was a topic on TV shows, on the internet, and on the front pages of newspapers, with many cheering him for standing up to the often inhospitable world of airline travel, and others accusing him of childish and dangerously reckless behavior. He was initially charged with criminal mischief. Well, you know how that goes, man. But so now this guy's life, after being feted and after being having his ass kissed and everybody telling him what a marvelous guy, he is Mr. Nobody, man.
Yeah, are you kidding me? People are going to want to write a movie about him and everything.
Who's going to write a movie about him? You know something I don't know?
No, but I think it would be interesting.
To write a movie about him, huh?
Yeah. They wrote a movie about that one guy, Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, that was pretty good. You see that one with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, I saw Catch Me If You Can. What's that got to do with this guy?
They can make a movie about anybody, because everybody's got a story to tell.
Yeah, they can make a movie about you, bud. I'd like to see him make a movie about you.
Really?
Yeah.
Who would play him? I bet you they'd get that little midget from Love Boat to play him. And
shut up. Well, get out of here. Make a movie about you. I don't know. Everybody does have a story to tell. And I bet you could make a movie about everybody's life. I mean, a movie, everybody that lives, a great movie could be made from their life.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I honestly do. I think every human being on Earth, anybody, man, you, me, Bud, anybody, if you sat down and interviewed people long enough, you could make one hell of a movie out of their lives. You know, that was the whole point of that movie, The Player, you know.
Whose life was that about?
It wasn't about anybody's life. It was a movie made by Robert Altman about the studio, about making movies. And this one guy who plays this jackass, he says, we don't need writers. We can get stories from anywhere. Look, the newspaper. And he was kind of making the point that they didn't need writers. You could just get stories out of the newspaper. And he was pulling all these jackball ideas out of the newspaper. But
yeah, but that's where you get all your ideas.
I'm doing a daily radio show, man, way different than doing a movie where you got 3 years to make it. But the point that I'm making here is you need writers, but it's true that the material that you can pull from to make a movie is everywhere. And there's not a human being out there, not one, that you couldn't make a fantastic movie out of their life.
Well, you just say that to kiss butt.
Right? What do you mean, kiss butt?
Because you're making everybody in the audience think they could have a movie and everything?
No, I'm telling you for real, man. If I had the time and I had the actual inclination, I'd write a movie about your life, bud. I'd write one about you, Robert, but I don't have the time, I don't have the inclination, I don't have the interest, and both of you guys bore me. So,
all right.
Thank you. All right, 877-876-PHIL, a world-famous Phil Hendry show. So there, I'm glad we were able to get that out. There are rumors of a reality show for Steven Slater. Wait a minute, man. There are rumors of a reality show for Steven Slater. Stone Entertainment, they made The Mole and The Man Show, both of which are off the air. I'm kidding. The Man Show's still on. They've approached Slater, but in what way they've approached him? From behind? Anyway, the Vatican declares Homer Simpson a Catholic. That coming up and more on The Phil Hendry Show.
It's The Phil Hendry Show.
Nobody laughed about it.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I want Jason to hear what a good version sounds like.
When I was a little girl, I had a rag doll.
Yes, this is
only doll I've ever owned.
Tina Turner singing River Deep, Mountain High.
Now I love you just the way I love that rag doll.
This is the good version, not the glee
only
version.
Now
Glee's better.
No, Glee ain't better.
Yeah, man, that's what I figured you'd say something like that.
What?
Yeah, I figured you'd say something like that.
I can't hear you, man.
Turn it down, man.
No, I'm not going to turn it down. No, it's just I saw Rance on Twitter over the weekend. And, he says, I don't care what anybody says. The Glee version of this is better. I thought I was going to cry when I saw that.
Yeah, but I don't know. See, everybody, you know that song. Nobody know that song.
Yeah, why can't we hear the Glee version?
You can hear it. I'm just telling you, it's not better than that. And as much as I don't like Billy Joel, the Glee version of, well, actually, to be honest with you, Glee improves Billy Joel, so I shouldn't say. Glee's same-sex tryst raises eyebrows. Oh, here we go again with another parent group. Now, I understand, and I just had this discussion off-air with Mr. Rance, because he's a huge Glee fan, to the point where everything they do on Glee, he thinks is great. He thinks it's the greatest acting that's ever happened, the greatest music that's ever happened, the greatest directing that's ever happened, the greatest writing that's ever happened, the greatest everything that's ever happened, the greatest network. And he sent him a script, and they sent it back, and he said, well, their writing isn't all that good. Anyway, last week's episode of Fox's Glee started with two female characters, Santana and Brittany, engaged in a makeout session on a bed where the two make reference to scissoring. Though the scene indicates they've been making out, the episode merely shows the two characters kissing each other's necks. Now, at least one conservative media group disgusted by it, the Conservative Media Research Center, is concerned that a supposedly family-friendly program would become a disgusting gay teen sex romp. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, me too.
See, we had the discussion, and you know me. My argument is, why do we sexualize kids in culture? Well, it is different when we're talking about a TV program that is representing the life of teenagers. Teenagers make out. Teenagers have sex. I don't think we need to show teenagers having sex, but we certainly have to acknowledge that teenagers are in that part of their life where they're discovering that, and they have intimate affection for each other. Okay. And gay teens, too. And what they showed was that reality. Two girls kissing each other's necks, and they made a reference to scissoring.
What's that?
Well, figure it out, man.
Yeah, figure it out, man. This is scissor, and this is scissor. And you put them together and look like that.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Great. So.
Yeah, so if you put.
Shut up, man. Okay, you got it?
Yeah.
Scissoring. Now, they made a reference to it. They didn't do it. So what is the point of that scene? In other words, we see affection between two lesbian, underage, teenage lesbians. It's not graphic sex. It is the kissing of each other's necks. So we don't even see lip locking. And then they make a reference to some form of lesbian physical relating, you know. And
you're all nervous about it and everything.
What do you mean I'm nervous about it?
You're all like, ooh, certain things.
Hey, you know, bud, I'm going to haul off and belt you in a minute.
Well, what are we getting nervous? Are you anti-lesbian?
No, I'm not anti. You know what's making me nervous, man? The fact that I may punch your ass out right now. That's making me nervous. I'm trying to be tasteful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're all like, they were scissoring.
Yeah, yeah. And what else? What else?
I don't know.
No, go ahead. Tell me. Tell me how I'm blowing it. What else did I do?
Well, just, you know.
You know, the fact that I don't think Glee is as great a show as you think it is and Rance thinks it is, huh? I'm supposed to apologize for that?
No.
Huh? Uh-uh. The Conservative Media Research Center is concerned that a supposedly family-friendly program would become a disgusting gay teen sex romp, they said with a big smile. Dan Gaynor, VP of Business and Culture at the Conservative Media Research Center, he doesn't draw a salary because, quite frankly, how do they make money? Anyway, Dan believes that Ryan Murphy, the show's creator, spends his days fantasizing about teen girls, well, in much the same way I do, scissoring on the bed in what the media tells us is a family-friendly show. Murphy, by the way, the guy that is the creator of this show, is gay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, huh? So, Mr. Gaynor, you know, like so many individuals that engage in a public discourse about gay people, gay sex, gay reality, or just the reality of life, like so many of those people, you wind up sounding kind of dumb, you know? You wind up sounding like you don't know what the hell it is you're talking about. He's fantasizing about teen girls scissoring. The cat's gay. He don't fantasize about teen girls other than how to dress them. He fantasizes about what he wants teen girls to wear to the fashion show or something. That's all he's doing. Anyway, Gaynor went on to call the episode blatant propaganda. Aha! Blatant propaganda. That means it's one more recruiting tool for the gays. And twisted. He's been twisted. These are two girls that kissed each other's necks. Now, on the surface, it's really nothing. It's two girls laying there kissing each other's necks. However, when you show two girls kissing each other's necks and then you say they're lesbians and then you throw in scissoring, yes, people's imaginations go wild, like Dan Gaynor's. Murphy's mind isn't going crazy because he's gay and he doesn't fantasize about teen girls doing it with each other unless he's fantasizing about teen girls, remembering their lines. So he doesn't have to sit there long after they're supposed to go home having people doing line readings because they can't get the damn scene done. That's what he's fantasizing about. That's his nightmare. Dan Gaynor, on the other hand, you know what, Dan? The more you open your yap, the more we all know how you think, man. Fantasizing about teen girls, the only thing going on about that is you, man. Huh? Do you understand what I'm saying? You, Dan! Anyway, Dan Gaynor went on to call the episode blatant propaganda, twisted, but he liked it. He's been an outspoken critic about, no, it doesn't say that, but, you know, He's been an outspoken critic. They're all outspoken critics, aren't they? They're all...
Yeah, every guy's all outspoken, and he's outspoken. Everybody outspoken.
As opposed to a critic that doesn't say anything.
Yeah. I'm a critic, but I've never said nothing to anybody about it.
Yeah, you're a inspoken critic.
Yeah, I'm inspoken, man. So I've seen Glee, and I hate it. I'm a major critic, but I've never said nothing, written nothing, talk about it, nothing.
Oh, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more on Glee, more on Dan Gaynor, and the moron, Dan Gaynor, when we come back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I'm an outspoken critic, though.
Good. You can be an outspoken critic.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
All right. Well, anyway, here is the Glee version of said song.
When I was a little girl, I had a rag doll.
Blows.
Only no, it doesn't.
I've ever owned.
Blow, blows, the blows, it blows.
No, it doesn't.
I love you just the way.
Blow, 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 blow.
Shut up, man. I want to hear the song. Shut up. This song's great.
It blows. Blow, 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 blow.
Shut up.
Blow, 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 blows.
You're a jerk, man, saying that.
Oh, relax. That's pretty good, though. You're right.
What song, man?
Oh, how I love you, baby. Baby, baby, baby.
All right, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. All right, you're right. That's a very good song.
Yeah, you're talking about it blows.
Now I can't find River Deep Mountain High by Ike and Tina Turner because I clicked and I dragged it over into the tonight's file, and it's gone, man. It's gone, baby. It's gone. That's all right. We'll find it. Anyway, you're right. That's a very nice song. You're never going to get me to believe that Tina Turner's version doesn't kick ass.
Yeah, you're all going blow, 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 blow.
I'm screwing around. Got to get a sense of humor, man, will you? You're always messing with stuff that I like.
Yeah, but I never come in and go blow, 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 blow about a music you like.
You guys have done enough damage. Don't worry about it. I could name a million times you cats have come in and screwed with stuff that I've tried to do. By the way, speaking of iTunes, here is the top 10, the list of the top 10 singles and albums on iTunes this week. Number one, Back to Remember, Taylor Swift. Number two, Like a G6, The Kastariks, Far East Movement, Dev, Just a Dream, Nelly, Just the Way You Are, Bruno Mars, Only Girl in the World, Rihanna, Raise Your Glass, Pink, Pink's Back, Club Can't Handle Me, featuring David Guetta from Step Up 3D, Flo Rida, DJ Goddess, Fallen in Love, Usher, Dynamite, and Bottoms Up, Trey Songz. Albums, Charleston, South Carolina, 1966, Darius Rucker. BTR, Big Time Rush, I Am Not a Human Being, Lil Wayne, which, by the way, we played the Lil Wayne on one of our Sunday Night Phils, and boy, is he foul.
Yeah, Lil Wayne, man, he's real, man. He keep it real all the time.
You can call it keeping it real. He's as foul as they get. What's that song we played, Gonorrhea?
That's great. I love that song. It makes me feel good about life and everything.
Gonorrhea makes you feel good about life, huh?
Yeah.
Free Wind, The Far East Movement, Sigh No More, Mumford & Sons, Recovery, Eminem, Doo-Wops and Hooligans, Bruno Mars, The Age of Ads, and The Rock and the Tide. Oh, yeah, and finally, number 10, All That Remains with their album, For We Are Many. So that's the top 10 singles and tunes on iTunes this week. Number is 877-876-PHIL, and of course, our website is philhendryshow.com. Now, here's a story. I don't know whether or not this is for real. Is the guy doing this because he wants to get reelected? Nonetheless, you know he's got to have some friends. He's making a lot of friends. It's the sheriff there in the Chicago area sheriff of Cook County, which is the city of Chicago, Cook County. Sheriff Tom Dart has halted foreclosure evictions. And I'll tell you with good reason. The sheriff considered a leading contender to be Chicago's next mayor after a series of headline-grabbing initiatives announced on Tuesday. He's ordered deputies to stop carrying out mortgage foreclosure evictions, and this will be the second time he's ordered that in 2 years. He halted the evictions after they acknowledged, okay, the three leading lenders acknowledged some employees signed off on foreclosure documents without even reading them. Now, that's the latest in a long list of scandals now affecting this foreclosure situation. This is a, you know, the thing that I find to be outrageous, it's a brazen thing that knows no end. Now, at the beginning of the show tonight, we were talking in our uncensored rant hour. I said, look, TARP was basically a gun to the head of the American people. And it wasn't a gun put there by the government. This was a gun that was placed to the government's head, and the government turned around and stuck the gun to our head. What was it? Well, we can't lend money because we don't know how bad this situation is. So we're not going to be moving any money around, and the money is just going to cease moving in this country and worldwide unless we get some relief, because we need to have you back us up, because we don't know how much of a mess we made out of this. All right, so what do you need? Well, you know, now comes the money. Now, that's understandable, and things happen, and people mess up, and bad loans are made, and okay, we get it. Going back to the early 1980s when they started making some of these subprime loans, and no, it wasn't just about the fact that Barney Frank was trying to get a lot of low-income loans to the low-income people. It was a lot of that, and it's a whole lot more. So those mistakes were made. Let's move on, shall we? Okay, great. But they don't want to move on. Here's what they want to do. They want to get their TARP money, and then they want to just continue business as usual. We've got all of these bonuses to pay out, and we're going to expand our office. I got $1 million I'm putting into a brand new toilet that I've got that me and the other executives can crap in. And then, of course, I need to wait, what do you mean? Well, hold on, man. Well, you never said, you know, you didn't tell us. So all these games get played, right? Now, if you're a mindful individual and you run a bank and you know that there is such a thing as perception, and you realize the gravity of the situation you're in, you take steps with your employees and with the operation, say, look, we better pull some of this stuff back. So let's get smart. Not one guy that did any of that. Let's start acting our age around here, and this is a very serious situation. Some of you jackasses made some very serious miscalculations with these loans. We packaged all kinds of stuff up. We sold it off. We sold people. We didn't know what we were selling, okay? We are on the hook for a lot of money here. Now, none of this stuff happened. We had to go back and say, well, what are you doing with these bonuses? And what the hell do you think you're doing with your new office? And what the hell is with the junkets? What are you people doing? Well, nobody told us, you know. All right, now what do you think they're doing? Just like the guy said the other day, they are rubber stamping these foreclosures as quickly as they were rubber stamping the loans they made originally. In other words, the very act of just, you know, rubber stamping these loans, creating this enormous a group of toxic loans that were bundled up and sold off to lender after lender after lender. The next thing you know, nobody knows what they're worth. Nobody knows what they're not worth. And we could be a half a trillion in the hole worldwide on this stuff. So all of this crap gets organized, at least to the extent that they get their TARP money. But now what are they doing? Now they're rubber stamping all of these foreclosures. Now you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck. I thought I heard the president say not too long ago, we're gonna do some loan modification, and we're gonna give people mortgage relief. Did you hear that? I thought I heard that. You heard about anybody getting any of that? Half of the people that are in these mortgage relief programs are dropping out of them because they're a sham. I have heard them described by an officer with a major bank, somebody that I know personally, someone who works in loan modification. He has described it as fraud. Fraud. And I'm telling you, he works for a big bank. Now, somebody better do something. When the word finally got out that this nonsense was going on, Bank of America made the announcement, we are halting all foreclosures. I didn't hear those gutless wonders of Chase saying anything, but you better believe if they haven't, they're gonna. Now, you guys at Chase, you know, I've talked about you before. I don't know whether you even know what doing the right thing is, but you can see where B of A is right now. And if you want some of the same heat, Why don't you just go ahead and keep on foreclosing on people? I pray that at the end of this process, there isn't a Bank of America or a Chase left if this stuff keeps going on. I mean, if they keep on doing what they're doing, acting in the same irresponsible manner, every single solitary aspect of this has been despicable in the way they relate to the community. The individual people that they're lending money to or not lending money to, just the government, the public at large, it's despicable. I hope, if you guys don't change your ways, that there is no longer a Bank of America, that you, this generation of B of A executives, will have signed a death warrant. I would love it for you cats to go down in history as the guys that did that. So this sheriff in Chicago has said, based upon these clowns talking about rubber stamping these foreclosure documents, he said, I ain't going to throw anybody out. You don't even know what you're doing. Dart said, this is so outrageous, and these poor families are being put through this day in and day out by people that don't do their jobs. You got that right. It's hard for me to stomach these people because this isn't just their bike we're taking away or their car. It's their house. He singled out Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and GMAC Ally Financial, saying if he doesn't receive affidavits from the institutions verifying the 1,000 to 1,500 eviction orders they've already filed with his office, he will not enforce them. I don't think it's going to take the banks a lot of time, he said. Meanwhile, Dart said his latest moratorium could be expanded to other institutions. He explained he already has asked county and state prosecutors if they have any information about questionable practices by other lenders. Dart's announcement comes a day after B of A announced plans to resume seizing more than 100,000 homes in 23 states, saying it had the legal right to do so despite accusations that documents used in the process were flawed. Ally Financial Incorporated's GMAC mortgage unit also is resuming foreclosures, and I'll bet you Chase never even stopped.
They don't have no comment or nothing.
Yeah, I'll bet they don't have any comment. A B of A spokesman said in an email that the bank already has reviewed the documents in Illinois and several other states. Our assessment shows underlying information provided as the for the basis for the... And then he passed out. A spokesman for GMAC, just some poor slob named James Olecki, some guy that works in the back. They pushed him out in front of a microphone. He said he had a similar statement saying the affected files have been reviewed and remediated appropriately. Then he went in the back and took a drink. Mr. Olecki said after he had a couple of blasts, quote, we are happy to respond to any questions from the sheriff related to this matter, and then he passed out. Dart said if the lenders have taken the proper steps, that it should be no problem to say so in writing. All I'm looking for from them is an affidavit saying, Sheriff, the cases you have in your system were all reviewed. All the documents were done correctly. They're all legally done, and you are not enforcing illegal orders. 2 years ago, Dart made national headlines when he stopped evictions. Yada, 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 yada. He put procedures in place that ensured his deputies were not putting on the street people who had paid their rent and were unaware of their landlord's financial problems. And he also sued Craigslist over ads he said promoted prostitution and headed the investigation into the alleged resale of burial plots. This is an ass-kicking cop. I love this guy.
Yeah, there's got to be something wrong with him, though, man.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I mean, again, no cop... See, that's real political. Cop get political, man. That's bad.
Yeah, you got a point. Every time a cop try to be political, then that's bad.
That's what I said.
Oh, you guys are crazy. I think he's doing a great job. Jimmy McMillan was a hit at last night's New York gubernatorial debate, and we'll tell you what he said that has people talking. Jimmy McMillan, coming up on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com.
It's... The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Remember, after every show, we post our show log on our website, on our homepage, philhendryshow.com. You go over there. In fact, if you go to our homepage, you will see a variety of things to enjoy. You'll see our Phil feed, P-H-I-L-P-H.
Yeah, that's bad on account of kids will think that's how you spell it.
Oh, get out of here. P-H-E-E-D?
Yeah.
Get out of here, man. This is for adults anyway. If you don't know how to spell feed by now, as in feed bin, as in feed bag, Doug, or whatever your name is, Bud.
Doug?
I thought it was Bud, but I wasn't sure, so I called you Doug. You dig me? Anyway, so there's the Phil feed, and we have on the left side, you'll see Follow Phil, which is our Twitter and Facebook links. We have our classic podcasts, our Phil rants. Over on the right side, our recent shows. So if you want to know, hey, I liked the show last night, I want to download that. Well, guess what? Go over to recent shows, and the last five are there. Or you can go into the archives. You go under Fresh Phil, that's where our recent shows are, and Classic Phil, that's where our classic shows are. And then we have a list of our affiliates over there at philhenryshow.com. Jimmy McMillan of the Rent is Too Damn High party upstages Carl Paladino and Andrew Cuomo. Long Island Democrat Andrew Cuomo and Republican Carl Paladino may be the only two candidates in New York that polls suggest have a plausible chance to win the governorship, but it was Jimmy McMillan who stole the show at last night's debate with a simple message: the rent is too damn high. The rent is too damn high party candidate stole the show during the gubernatorial debate at Hofstra University on Long Island. Here is Jimmy McMillan of the Rent is Too Damn High party delivering his opening remarks at yesterday's New York gubernatorial debate.
I represent the Rent is Too Damn High party. People working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week to some a third job. Women can't afford to take care of their children, feed their children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. My main job is to provide a roof over your head, food on the table, and money in your pocket. This is politics as usual. Playing a silly game, and it's not going to happen. The Rent Too Damn High movement, the people I'm here to represent can't afford to pay their rent. They're being laid off right now as I speak. They can't eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Listen, someone's stomach, your child's stomach just growled. Did you hear it? Got to listen like me.
Okay.
Let's talk about the issue.
Mr. Cuomo, 30 seconds for you, sir.
Well, you didn't give him 30 seconds. I just saw you didn't give him 30 seconds, you big mouth.
What are you talking about?
Is he supposed to get 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Well, that big mouth butted in before it was 30 seconds. You racist?
That's not racism just because he came in 2 seconds early.
I think it was. On every question, McMillan stuck to his message concerning soaring rent, including during a question about gay marriage.
As a karate expert, I will not talk about anyone up here because our children can't afford to live anywhere. Nowhere. There's nowhere to go. Once again, why? You said it. The rent is too damn high.
Thank you, Mr. McMillan. Mr. Cuomo.
First, I'm with Jimmy. The rent is too damn high.
Rent too damn high, party people. If you want to marry a shoe, I'll marry you.
The McMillan campaign website produced a song to express his platform.
Rent, it's too damn high. Crying out loud. Crying out
hey,
loud.
Hey, this is me, Jimmy loud. McMillan. Can we talk?
Yeah.
You know, I'm concerned. Where are your children going to live when they become adults and they have children?
Are you gay?
You know, following the attack on the World Trade Center, you know, things just rampage out of control. But you've been voting like you don't even care. For crying out loud, what you need to see to ask you to change your voting habits? Something is wrong. And your children and your grandchildren. I've been fighting. I've been protesting at Cooper Union.
Yeah, okay, that's great.
Mike, I felt this throwing up my leg.
So there is Jimmy McMillan. I'd like to play the whole thing, Jimmy, but it sucks. So, no, it's good. It's good. It's just that this is better. Anyway, sporting a throwback mustache and beard and wearing black gloves, it's not throwback. It's for old guys like us. I think Jimmy's about my age. It's a good look.
Yeah, I like the black gloves.
It's a good look. Sporting a throwback mustache and beard and wearing black gloves, he repeated refrain of his repeated refrain of the rent is too damn high, won over the audience, and sent curious New Yorkers flocking to the internet on Tuesday morning. You know, seriously, if you give people a refrain, a phrase, just like Johnny Cochran, if it don't fit, you must acquit, that's what people respond to. His name popped up all over Twitter and his own website. rentistoodamnhigh.org crashed at points during the morning. McMillan said he appreciated the love and was gratified he stole the show. The mustache and the rent is too damn high is what got me here, he quipped. One thing most New Yorkers wanted to know, who is Jimmy McMillan? Well, he's a 64-year-old retired postal worker from Flatbush. He served in Vietnam, and he cited his service as the reason he wore gloves on stage for the debate. The chemicals of Agent Orange, dioxin, a lot of other chemicals mixed up, I would get sick, he explained after the debate with Carl Palladino and others. I know I'm not going to be able to breathe if I take them off. It could be psychological. I don't know, but I just put them on, and I wear them anyway. So he thinks he has these chemicals all over his hands from Vietnam. This isn't McMillan's first foray into politics. He ran for mayor in the city in 2005, but he pulled in less than 1% of the vote. He was criticized for blaming soaring rents on, quote, Jewish landlords. Well, now, in Monday night's debate, McMillan touted lower rents as the cure for the state's economic ills. It all boils down to one thing, those Jews. No, he said the rent's too damn high.
Yeah, but he did say about Jews and stuff.
Now, what did he say that?
I don't know, and, you know, it's too bad because he was funny until I heard that. But,
yeah, black people are always saying that.
Oh, they're not always saying it, man.
All right, well, no, I don't want to talk about it right now, okay? Our show is produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wagon, our associate producer and screener Dan Northcraft. Dan, I hope you get better. I hear you got a cold. Did a great job again, as usual. Tonight! Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Good night from El Pacifico.
You blew it!
Phil Hendry.